This is Darcy Ungaro, and welcome to the NZ Everyday Investor Podcast. Whether it's in property, Bitcoin, shares, or business, this is a show designed to equip the everyday Kiwi make better investment decisions. The NZ Everyday Investor Podcast is brought to you by podcasts.nz in conjunction with Ungaro & Co. Financial Services. Please remember, none of this is financial advice. We hope you enjoy the show. Well, this is NZ Everyday Investor. You're listening to Darcy Ungaro, and I'm joined in the studio by...
Pumpkin.
Welcome, Pumpkin.
How are you today? I'm good, thanks. I'm looking forward to this next part of our controversial topic of medicinal cannabis.
It's so spicy. But even in the last few weeks that we recorded this episode, talking to a few people, it kind of already feels like things are changing so much where it's not as taboo as even what I thought it would be. Like, I was kind of thinking, ooh, this is a bit spicy talking about this, but it seems to be all changing so fast, public opinion, that it's now kind of okay, you know, to talk about it. It's not okay to do it, but it's okay to talk about it. And okay to talk about doing it maybe is the next step. I don't know. But this is going to be a really interesting show. Paul Manning, co-founder of Helius. Pumpkin, why don't you give us a lowdown on Helius? Give us that paragraph.
Sure. Helius Therapeutics is a biotech company.
You're not even reading this.
I know this. They focus on the research and development of medicinal cannabis.
Excellent. So in this episode, this is part two, we're going to be touching a lot more on the process that Helius went through to obtain funding and some of the core beliefs that they have in terms of manufacturing a product, how they actually do that, what the opportunity is, not just in New Zealand, but overseas, and how Helius is positioning itself. So it's going to be enlightening, to say the least. And it gives you a really unique insight into a business which is currently being formed in an industry that's currently being formed.
Can't wait.
Okay, well, let's get stuck into it. And remember, this is part two. If you haven't listened to part one, part two might be a bit disjointed. So go back and listen to part one first. All right, without further ado, hope you enjoy the show. Peace out.
Yes.
The approach that we took for Helius was a bit different. So we created this company a couple of years ago. We built up our IP, created our team, built our brand, designed the company from the ground up. Then we partnered with a big consulting firm called Deloitte, who helped us financially model the business so to ensure that was robust, using data from the North American market where they do a lot of business. And because we don't have it, because this is a startup industry, there's nothing to benchmark companies like Helius against. So we're able to benchmark ourselves against.
So just to pause you there. So yeah. How important was it to partner with a firm like Deloitte to do this? Do you think you could have achieved the same thing without that partnership?
It's possible, but my view was that Deloitte bring a high degree of credibility to the business. When you've got a startup business and a startup industry which is running ahead of legislation, again, it's an area where you need to over-index on your legitimacy. You want to be bulletproof. You don't get much better than Deloitte. Those guys were absolutely fantastic. And it wasn't just their people and their credibility, but it was also the fact that they had access to company data and insights from the more established, you know, North American, particularly the Canadian market, that we could then apply to model here in New Zealand. So we could all know, not just for our investors, but even for ourselves, we now have absolute confidence in this business and how it's going to perform financially based on the work they did. And that certainly did help in the process. Right. And so what we were doing was we didn't do an IPO or a retail style investment. We decided, because the sort of business we are and the industry we're going to, we wanted key wholesale investor to come and join the business, and it was an investor that wouldn't just bring the financial resources we needed to get this business
We want smart money.
So we went through that process. We had a lot of interest in the business. We ended up actually oversubscribed through that process. We've now settled on an investor. We're in the final stages of that process now.
So Deloitte, and forgive my ignorance, but with Deloitte, their role was to give you that data, give you that guidance, kind of help you build the sort of structure of the systems, etc. Yeah. But also, were they the ones that effectively marketed this investment opportunity to other investors. They did it for you?
They did. They did that for a lot of the investors that we reached out to initially. As it turned out, actually, the party that we have ended up partnering with actually found us through we had a big piece written about us on the front page of the Herald business section back at Easter, and we got a huge amount of interest from that. And as it turned out, actually, the investor we ended up with approached us directly through through hearing about the business through the media. But having said that, I wouldn't do it any differently in terms of the work we did with Deloitte and all of the other interested investors all came through that process.
And it goes without saying, there's probably a certain amount of compliance, certain amount of hoops that you need to jump through when you're seeking funding from private individuals. Yeah. But they effectively take care of that whole process for you?
They do. They manage a lot of that for us. They make sure the models are robust. They make sure that we, that we are, operating the most professional way we can. That we structure the deal, and they're able to present different types of structures as we go through the process. For a business like this, for example, it's quite hard to value. So they're able to help us develop models to work through that. I think if we'd gone it alone and we didn't have an organization like them by our side, it could have ended up bad for the investor or bad for us or bad for both. Yeah. It's really clear. It's really robust.
And not to put down the whole practice of crowdfunding that's a really cool thing.
But
I guess from a safety, transparency, exactly what you're going to get, and that external people have really scrutinized the heck out of this.
Yeah.
Going through the path that you did was probably the best way for you guys. Yeah. Again, trying to work on that overall brand or that image problem that this industry has.
Yep.
That's the smartest way to do it, right?
Go
as clinical, as clean, as almost over sterile, but that's what's needed right now.
Absolutely. Like a lot of the other things, we've talked about here, it's about there are various ways you could approach this business or any business, but I think in the medicinal cannabis space, that word cannabis is loaded for a lot of people. It comes with stigma from years of existing in the shadows. And what we're doing is creating this new startup business and a startup industry, and we're converting in part a black market to a legitimate one. And at the same time, we also have to take on pharmaceutical companies and other organizations like that. We have to engage with the government. We have to engage with the public. We're producing a therapeutic or a medicine that's designed to help people who are suffering from all range of different ailments. So as soon as you operate in a way with a business in this space that is anything less than pitch perfect, I think that the whole offer and the brands can start to unravel, and we have to over-index. So everything we've done, from the GMP certification to bringing on partners like Deloitte, to the quality of the brand that we've built, to the investment, and so we're building a world-class cannabinoid research facility right at the heart of our business. So the long-term future for our business is actually an intellectual property and in research and development, and that again is part of the business's commitment to just standards and growing in the knowledge economy and doing everything to the highest possible standards. And we're gonna stay that course all the way through. And I think it's the best way to approach.
If you go to the website, the website's pretty cool, isn't it?
It's a good website. Yeah.
Because you had a look at a couple of the articles, so did I. But just on the, I think it was maybe on the front page, the products, the pictures of the products, you could tell right away there was no kind of that whole stigma or that whole black market, that whole tinge, that whole stuff.
Yep.
It wasn't there. It wasn't visible. It was very clean. It was really tidy.
Well, professional, I think. Because, in the whole image thing is, I imagine it's a big battle for you.
Yep.
Like, when you think about people doing medicinal cannabis, you think it's, a bunch of hippies or whatever. But I found just from doing a bit of research before we met you, they all seem like normal people in the industry. Mm. They're all quite smart. Yeah. They've got a lot of research they've done. They're all professionals. What's your experience of the people you've worked with?
Absolutely. That's one of the misconceptions, and it's part of the stigma issue. The reality is that medicinal cannabis is a mainstream product for mainstream people.
Mm.
The people that need access to these medicines are people like you and I, you know, they really are. And yes, you've got fringe parts of society who are, well, not even fringe parts of society, actually, just people who are using this product recreationally aren't necessarily, they're often very motivated, very intelligent, very creative people. In fact, you know, I've spent, over 15 years in the advertising industry, and a lot of people, you know, use cannabis to bring out their creativity.
Yeah, where do those ideas come from?
Well, you know, clearly. It's not a secret, you know, it is. So even on the recreational side, you know, it will be really wrong, you know, to stigmatize people that even use cannabis recreationally as being, you know, people that sit around playing video games and eating corn chips and, you know, with no desire to get up and do anything in the world. That's a bollocks stigma, which is not actually reflective of most people who use the product. But certainly on the medical side, no, I mean, we're talking about people who are good, perfectly well-rounded, everyday, smart, intelligent people who've worked out that cannabis, and for some of them, it's the only thing that actually eases their pain or treats their conditions. I was actually at an event just on Sunday night with a wonderful woman called Dr. Huana Hickey, and she...
This was at in Takapuna, right?
That's right, in Takapuna. Yeah, you know,
yes, I saw that. And I didn't see it, but I saw. Was it a video article? Clip or was it an article?
It might have been an article about it. Yeah, yeah. There's been a video and an article of that. You know, and you know, this woman is wonderful and inspiring. You know, she has a form of MS. She's using one of the registered products at the moment, which is a Tilray product, and for her, really, it's the only thing that works. It's costing her, though, a fortune, you know, and she would say it's not sustainable in the long term. So people like Huana are waiting for companies like us to produce high quality, you know, well regulated, affordable medicines here in New Zealand. You know, and this is somebody who has a PhD, as a lawyer, an incredibly articulate, intelligent, well rounded member of society, and is using these products. And that's classic. But the other thing you get, right, is that there are people now who aren't even using medicinal cannabis products today, but they could be benefiting, but aren't because the products aren't readily available here in New Zealand.
It's not talked about. They'd feel embarrassed. Like, would you... And I wanted to ask this question of Pumpkin, because I think this would be a really good sort of test. Do you... Like, would you go to your doctor? Would you go to your doctor and ask for medicinal cannabis if you felt like you needed it?
No.
And
probably not.
And why? Not that I think
you mean
should,
like, but right now sort of thing?
Yeah, like right now. If there was something that you felt you would genuinely benefit from this medicine, do you think you'd feel comfortable having that discussion?
At the moment, no, because I think I'd worried she'd think I was potted or something, you know, something weird. But on the flip side, like, I have a relative who is quite unwell, and if I could get my hands on some medicinal cannabis for this person, I would do it in a heartbeat. Yeah. So
especially if we knew that there was evidence that it could work. And we were just talking, was it this morning actually, we were made aware that one of our good friends overseas, you know, their daughter died, and we know of other people who have kids who are incredibly sick, like heartbreaking sick. And again, this probably isn't a cure-all drug for everybody, and it's not like this thing that we can just say everybody take it, right? And there's certain cases, but I know definitely of you know, with epilepsy, for example, I've heard of cases with CBD in particular where that could be an incredibly effective treatment.
Very much so, you know. And you know, we always say, you know, don't get in the way of a mother with a sick child who can benefit from a product like this. If they know they can benefit from it, they've seen the evidence, and they want to try the product. And you know, don't get in their way, and don't get in the way of somebody who has a sick friend or a relative or family member or somebody with, you know, somebody who's, you know, suffering from cancer and has chronic pain. Just don't, you know.
Totally. And, like, you would do anything. And, you know, I think if it was made available, I think there'd be a lot of people who are just, like you said, normal, regular people who could totally benefit from it.
You're right. You know, Pumpkin, we had this, we shot this documentary just recently with this really wonderful company called Attitude, and it was, the show was called In Pot Pursuit.
In Pot
Pursuit. And it's a two-part documentary series, and it basically follows the journey of a handful of different patients in New Zealand seeking medicinal cannabis. products. And one of the patients that was in there was a little girl called Anya Bartels.
Yeah.
And her, and she had a very severe form of pediatric epilepsy. And her parents had seen the benefit of cannabis-based products. And this has been, and there is a lot of evidence to support the use of cannabinoid medicines for epilepsy and for other and neurological disorders like that. And they had seen the effects of these products. They wanted access to them, and they'd been battling to get access to cannabis products in New Zealand
I've just put it up on the screen.
For
so
a long time.
If anyone's watching, if anyone's watching this, there is, and go to our Facebook page, you'll be able to see a link right now of this video. It's quite cool.
Yeah.
It was good. It was a really well-made, well-made documentary, but the story was interesting because we're talking about kids.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right. Do not get in the way of...
Don't get in their way, you know, and we shouldn't get, we've got to get... We have to get out of the patient's way and get them access.
Yeah.
But the tragedy was, so that, you know, beautiful little girl, they knew that that product could help her. Mm. And, you know, the horrible kind of irony of the situation is after the documentary, you know, was finished filming, finally, you know, her parents were able to get past all the red tape and get access to cannabis medicines for Anya, and she passed away.
Oh,
you know, and you go,
I'm gonna cry more.
It's just, you know, and this is, but this is happening every day in New Zealand. There are people suffering. There are people dying.
This was the girl who her sister had already passed
away. Yeah, you know, and medicinal cannabis certainly could have helped her, but we'll never know because, you know, she didn't get a chance to access it. Now, that it is changing. And like I said, prohibition is ending. The laws are changing. The politicians are onto it. The public are onto it. You know, you've got 87% support now from the public in the latest poll by the New Zealand Drug Foundation supporting the use of medicinal cannabis for chronic pain, which is the biggest category.
So just let me pause you there. Yeah. The what? The New Zealand
Drug Foundation.
Drug Foundation supports this.
Absolutely. Yep.
It's interesting. Hey?
Absolutely. They do. And they have the data to back it up in terms of public support. So you know that... you know, that message. Oh, I'm getting emotional about it as well now, just thinking about being involved in that documentary. Was
I never get
journey.
Emotional about mortgages. is there something wrong with me? Why don't I get emotional about mortgages?
I'll tell you something about the journey with this business is, in all honesty, you know, we'd all been, all of us that are involved in this business, all been affected in some way, either directly or indirectly, you know, by people that either should have had access to cannabis products or, you know, in my case, I had a really bad back injury and I had used, had Tramadol for a long time. So an opioid, a really powerful opioid, which I ended up with, you know, stomach, a really bad stomach ulcer, two of them actually, from using those products. And, you know, and I had researched that actually, you know, a non-psychoactive medicinal cannabis product would actually have been a lot better for me. And that frustrated me. But, you know, we got into this and to put my hand on my heart, we kind of got into it at the beginning, partly because of that, but largely because we saw a big economic opportunity. We're entrepreneurs. Yeah. I tell you, and that was 2 years ago, it didn't take long to realize that, you know, this is as much as a social opportunity as it is an economic opportunity for New Zealand. And you can't help but be moved by the stories. And you realize that once you get into this, yes, we might be business people capable of raising the capital to create a business like this, and that's all well and good, but we actually have a responsibility that's kind of come with that now.
Yeah.
And not just a responsibility, actually, that's completely out of plan. We kind of have this wholehearted desire now to actually make products that are going to help people, and it's pretty cool. This is the first time in my career, like I said, I've come from advertising, love what I did, but, you know, I've sold everything from, you know, KFC to booze to cars and everything
KFC
in between.
Too.
You know, and you know, this is for the first time we're really doing something that's
actually good.
It's really good.
Interesting thing that you touched on before. What was it? It was to do with ESG, environmental, social governance, right?
Yeah.
So we had Sam Stubbs from Simplicity a month or so back.
Yeah.
And Sam was talking about, you know, how the investments with KiwiSaver, there's this trend moving to invest in things and get away from sin industries, he called them, you know, alcohol, tobacco, firearms, weapons manufacturing, all that sort of stuff, and move towards industries that are actually good.
Yep.
You know, they're environmentally responsible, they're socially responsible, they have good governance, all that sort of stuff. But as the investors move, capital or funding becomes cheaper for those types of industries, and it becomes more expensive. So you get this reverse feedback where it becomes quite expensive for certain industries to fund growth, and that's actually a good thing. Mm. Do you want tobacco companies to be getting access to cheap capital? No. But would you like, you know, electric car manufacturers, to pick an easy one, to actually get access to cheap funding? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think it goes without saying that when you start to align your business with what is good, you know, using the environmental, social, and good governance things, those metrics, you're going to get success.
Yeah. But they have become, they've become very much intertwined, I think, you know. And I mean, most of the world's great businesses now have a higher order purpose. You know, a lot of us have heard there's a very a famous model developed by a guy called Simon Sinek. You might have heard of it. And he talks about, you know, consumers don't buy what you do, and they don't buy how you do it. They buy why you do it, you know. Mm. And it's and for us, you know, we had a very clear why, and Helios exists to improve quality of life. You know, we are a quality of life brand. That's what we're in business for. And the money will follow, you know. I mean, we have to be commercially and fiscally responsible. We are using a lot of capital to build world-class facility. We've got to pay highly qualified, capable people, you know. So we need to have a high level of commercial acuity. But when you fuse that with social good and a higher order purpose, you know, there's this type of magic that happens in businesses like this that it certainly helps in terms of attracting capital. And I can speak, you know, from our experience with Helios, you know, the investor partner that we have, you know, these people are probably, they'll be easily amongst the most successful New Zealand entrepreneurs, you know, we have but they have invested in this business because of its social impact, because they know that it will have far-reaching positive social implications for New Zealand and actually for the world once this business goes offshore. So and that was a big part. They saw the commercial upside, but equally, and maybe even more so, they saw the social upside.
Right. Interesting. So it's that whole concept of congruency.
Yep.
What you believe isn't in conflict with how you derive an income.
Yep.
You know, and this business opportunity, where you're not just a regular entrepreneur in the traditional sense. There's an entrepreneurial spirit, but there's also this kind of social cause that you're fighting for, I guess you could say, right?
You're absolutely right. It's kind of, it's sort of social entrepreneurship, if you will, you know, and it's interesting. It organically kind of grew into that, you know, it much more so as we moved along, you know. Like I said, you can't help but be moved by the patients that you talk to, the stories you hear. I mean, for us, you know, the handful of documentaries we've been involved in where you actually get to understand the journey that people are on and the opportunity that exists in the sector. So yeah, I think fusing those two things is really important. The other factor is probably environmental impact as well, and that's an important factor. And also, probably because we're creating a whole new industry, we're also looking at what's the opportunity for New Zealand's economy. Right. Yeah. So we've got, if we took that stat from before and we took 235,000 people using cannabis today, and we assume they were using a gram a day, which is what regular cannabis users defined as, you know, you've got about $1.3 billion worth of, at $15 a gram, I should say, about $1.3 billion worth of cannabis being consumed from the black market today by New Zealanders.
So $1.3 million.
$1.3
billion. $1.3
billion. Yeah. 235,000 people, a gram a day, $15 a gram.
Is that per day?
Yeah, 50, a gram a day, 1 gram.
Okay, no, the amount though. Sorry, the amount that you were just saying before, is that per day?
No, 1.3 billion a year.
Okay, 1.3 billion a year.
Yeah,
but that's still
big.
It's a huge market.
Yeah, absolutely. I can do that math over again if you want to.
I'm not very good with math.
No, it's okay. I stuffed it up myself. We'll do a snip.
Yeah, I need some help later on.
No, that's okay. Yeah, so if we look at the economic impact of the medicinal cannabis industry for New Zealand, and if we go back to the Ministry of Health data and we say, okay, there's 235,000 New Zealanders regularly using cannabis for medicinal purposes. So regular use of cannabis is defined as a gram a day, and the cost of a gram of cannabis on the black market is about $15 on average. So if you do the math on that over the course of a year, New Zealanders, 1 in 20 of us, are spending around about $1.2, $1.3 billion a year on cannabis, and we're buying that almost entirely from the black market. So that's a big black market economy that's being perpetuated due to prohibition.
No tax revenue.
No tax revenue.
Possibly a lot of harm. These aren't necessarily the best members of society that you want to put money in the hands of.
That's correct, yep. And it's completely unregulated. So for the people that are legitimately using those products for medicinal purposes, you know,
no idea what it is.
We don't really know what's in them. So yes, we've got an opportunity to improve that situation, but also convert some, you know, maybe in time, all of that black market revenue to taxable revenue. So, you know, that's a significant opportunity for New Zealand. That taxable revenue could be used to further, you know, other health outcomes for New Zealanders. Plus, we can create a whole lot of legitimate jobs, which also, of course, creates another form of tax revenue. And, of course, we end up with a regulated market. So, and the other thing we can do is then we can harness that New Zealand is actually a great country and a great business environment for medicinal cannabis. Because if you think about it, the agri sector, you know, is kind of the backbone of New Zealand in many respects. And horticulture is a big part of that. And the medicinal cannabis industry is basically a fusion of horticulture from the cultivation side of the industry and basically the knowledge economy, so biotechnology. And we Helios is a bio, we consider ourselves to be a biotechnology company. We'll cultivate cannabis, but it's a means to an end, only so we can extract the cannabinoids and make medicines. We're going to fuse this great horticultural expertise that we have here in New Zealand and a whole lot of
innovation as well. There's innovation. A huge spirit of innovation. So I wonder what kind of inventions will come when these kiwi fruit farmers start changing their crop and thinking about new ways of increasing yield in a certain amount of space. And
kiwis
are great at that.
In time, that's it. We want to take that. And we don't want to assume that just because New Zealand is a bit behind the world in terms of, you know, allowing medicinal cannabis producers and products in this market, that doesn't necessarily matter. And New Zealand's proven that time and time again, right? We've got great innovation, great people, great scientists down here, outstanding universities, world-class business people. I think we've put all that together and we've got an opportunity to take New Zealand produced medicinal cannabis products to the world. And as I mentioned before, you know, the world market, you know, is worth about $55 billion for medicinal cannabis alone. But people believe that it'll be worth about $200 billion at maturity. And that's excluding Asia, only because no one can work out what Asia's worth. That's massive.
So from a business opportunity, like we're talking about something which has got, you know, we're talking exponential growth. And going back to what Pumpkin was saying, you know, ages ago around for the NZ everyday investor, what could some of the opportunities be? Again, like the electric vehicle, there's a bit of a parallel where you don't really want to go too soon. I'm going to use a different example or a different parallel. Cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin. You know, do you want to be the guy who gets in maybe too soon? I'm looking at myself here, and loses a bit of money? Or do you want to just kind of wait for the technology to prove itself, you know, the market to mature, there'll be opportunities for everybody eventually. It's something to keep an eye on.
Yeah.
But if, as a retail investor, you want to get into this space, you're possibly dealing with some... Yeah, and there might be some options, but it is still very much a Wild West.
Yeah, it depends on, you know, from an investor standpoint, it depends on your appetite for risk. I mean, obviously, we've got what we're seeing right now is a very, very new, nascent sector, so much so that we are operating ahead of the legislation. So if there were to be a retail-style investment opportunity, you know, it's just a question of do you want to do that? If you do that right now, obviously I very much believe in the sector and I think that companies in the sector will do extremely well. I think it just depends on the company because, you know, we don't really know yet what some of these companies are going to be like. We don't know too much about the people behind them. We don't know a lot about how they're going to be operated. And the other thing is I would really encourage people as these opportunities do come on stream, and they will. I mean, it's certainly once the legislation changes, but probably even later this year, we'll start to see opportunities come up for investors in the space. And I would caution people to look really carefully at what they're investing in and how secured is that investment vehicle. Are you investing directly in the company that's going to own the IP? And what sort of activities is that company going to be allowed to undertake with your money? Is it actually going to be, you know, the development of medicinal cannabis products, or is it going to be other activities?
Yeah.
But that aside, I think once investors have a good chance, an opportunity to do their due diligence on the company and the people behind them, and as the legislation starts to come a little clearer, that, yeah, if you the further you go along, the lower your risk is. You know, I would say there'll be a good opportunity probably late this year, early next year, to get involved with some of these companies.
And I guess there's other ways to do it. We're talking about kind of one potential avenue here, but maybe there's a flower growing operation in Warkworth which has got perfect greenhouses or something like that, or there's a kiwi fruit orchard in Hawke's Bay that you want to buy, and maybe it's just a strategic move long-term, 5-10 years down the track, you might want to convert that over and change your crop. Yeah. I'm just saying.
Yeah, in terms of return sort of per square meter, you know, obviously medicinal cannabis is one of the most valuable crops in the world. I mean, the short to midterm challenge with that is partly one of licensing and, of course, all the security, you know, requirements. And
we're talking barriers to entry. There are significant barriers.
Yeah. And in our case, our facility and the setup of our business from where we are, you know, a few months ago to the end of through mid 2020. You know, we're talking it's a $15 million, you know, capital expense to get this.
$15 million. The floor area is
about 10,000 square meters.
10,000. You are oversubscribed.
Oversubscribed.
My question to you: maybe it's more of a statement, and you might not like me saying this. Why the hell didn't you go bigger? It sounds like such a it sounds like an amazing opportunity.
Yeah,
why didn't you go bigger?
So we can go bigger, actually. So the building we have, we have the ability to double the size of our operation 3 years' time.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, so we have pre-planned growth into it. Part of it was that we wanted to seek a level of investment that we thought was going to be practical from the market, that would actually be achievable. We also wanted to bear in mind that we have a pretty good handle on what we think the size of the New Zealand market is going to be. There are a few sort of variables in there. What we know now is that export is going to be allowable for companies like ours down the track. It seems that both sides of the house seem quite clear on that. So now we have much greater confidence. So when we started, in fact, even when we started the investment process, which was right at the very end of last year, you know, there was still a lot of unknowns back then, and there were things that you could have said we weren't completely confident on, just because nobody in the market actually had that knowledge. What we're seeing now is the confidence we have now is absolutely soared, because it's all the pieces are starting to come together. The political support, the public support. We know more about the regulatory environment now, and that's only getting better as we go along. Right. So,
and I guess the cool thing, that if you look at any sort of business which produces a service or a product, you can either go horizontal or you can go vertical.
Yep.
You've absolutely gone vertical from what I can see, from seed to medicine.
Seed to sell. Yep.
And so there's a huge amount of depth in that, where you can drill down, you can separate segments off in the future. The scope for expansion is colossal,
astronomical. Like we could create, Helios has the potential to become a $1 billion business. Like it literally has that potential. There are already several multi-billion-dollar businesses in this space. A lot of them out of Canada. So it has an enormous potential as it is today. Another big area which we could grow in, for example, is pet-based therapeutics. So CBD
and pet stone
is huge.
Our cat would love that.
Our cat would just love it. Imagine all the biscuits it would be eating.
He's such
anxious
cat.
The cannabinoids can help with pet anxiety, but because pets have endocannabinoid systems like us humans do, the product works in a very similar way. So, and the pet-based, particularly CBD-based pet supplements, is a many hundreds of millions of dollars worth of scale of sector in other countries. That's one thing. And then also,
what would happen if the cat got dry mouth? I'm just thinking, you know, it's licking itself. It's like,
you
the weirdest thing, wouldn't it? What does it do? Just purr uncontrollably?
I think that would depend on the amount of THC that was in the
We're going to try this one day. What, 2 years? You figure 2020? We'll get some cat supplements?
I think it'll come through pretty soon. It's certainly on our radar. I mean, you have to be...
I don't know if our cat can make it, though. I don't know. He's pretty old. But.
Look, it might extend their life. Part the other thing is, you know, you have to be careful not to bite off more than you can chew. We've got so much to do with Helios Therapeutics that, you know, these are really clear and present opportunities. You know, other ones include things like the dispensary space, you know, how these products dispense. Now, we don't know whether dispensaries will be allowable in New Zealand, so, you know, we can't make a call on that right now, but there are opportunities in that retail side of it if you want to go full vertical integration. There's also, I think with CBD being descheduled, it's conceivable it won't be in the next few years, but maybe in 4 or 5 years, it may be that CBD products become just over-the-counter products, or it might even become they are more like FMCG products. So in the States, we see
like
CBD water, CBD tea.
Yeah,
there's a company that's making like an espresso pod with a CBD in it. You know, so people are using it like a health supplement. So
because that's the non-psychoactive. So you're not going to know that you've taken something potentially?
You wouldn't know at all. It has zero psychoactive effect. And And
true.
It's less dangerous than grapefruit juice.
Because grapefruit juice is actually quite dangerous. And if you're on a couple of bits of medication, like I am, and one of them is atorvastatin, which is like a cholesterol-lowering medication, you're not allowed to drink grapefruit juice.
Yeah.
And it makes you wonder, like, how hard, like, maybe grapefruit juice should be criminalized.
Maybe it should. Maybe they can schedule grapefruit juice and deschedule cannabis. Yeah.
Just a little swap around. Somebody needs to do a little bit of housekeeping here.
Yeah. But the CBD is actually like the ultimate sort of supplement for people to take every day, you know, like vitamins or other things. And right. with no psychoactive effects and zero harm, you'd have to say, why not? So it's logical. And in the future, it'll become like that. When it's like that, you know, it becomes an everyday product. So that's an even bigger
An everyday product for the everyday investor. So we've gone over time a little bit. Thank you, Paul.
Pleasure.
We could, and I told you this would happen. We could probably talk all day on this topic.
Uh-huh.
I'd love to, actually, but we, you know, Pumpkin's got babysitting people that need to be relieved. We need to cut the show. Sure.
Fair enough.
But is there any parting words of wisdom just for our audience? So think about, you know, the NZ everyday investor, regular everyday people, just trying to build something, doing the best they can, coming from different starting places. From where you sit in an industry which is very new.
Mm.
But even just as a business person, as an entrepreneur,
yeah.
What would be like one awesome tip that you could give our listeners?
Yeah, I think for me, it's about looking for sunrise industries, not sunset industries. Industries that have, you know, uncapped potential. And medicinal cannabis is certainly one of them, but there are a number of others as well. And I think, you know, getting in early enough in these sunrise sectors, are looking for businesses that are well managed with a strong executive lineup, that are well funded, that have a very clear vision, and that they are driven by a higher order purpose that fuses commercial priorities and ideally social priorities together, are likely to be the I think that's where the sweet spot for investors.
Winner
are
gonna chicken be. Dinner.
Yeah, that's it.
Awesome. What's your favorite word at the moment?
Cannabinoid.
Cannabinoid. It's got a certain ring to it. I'm trying to remember what mine is because I was thinking about this when I came in. I got to ask you what your favorite word is because it's just thinking about that. Mine is disingenuous. Disingenuous. I woke up in the middle of the night thinking, oh my goodness, I'm totally unprepared at life. I don't know what this word means. People are using this word. I've been left behind, so I had to Google it.
Yeah.
Disingenuous. You know what it means?
Yeah, I do, actually. Yeah, you do. It's a form of dishonest or being ingenuine.
Mm. Well done. Yeah. Well done. See, I didn't really, because I hadn't really had much exposure to that word because I'm not a disingenuous guy, of course.
No, none of us here are.
No, of course not. But yeah, so anyway, thank you. We didn't really get a chance to talk much about you, Paul, but I've got a great bio that I'm going to put on the show notes. If people want to find you, helios.co.nz.
Correct.
I had the website up on the screen and I've put it up. So if you're watching by video, you'll be able to see this.
Mm.
But also I'll put that on the show notes. People can find you on LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
Any other way that they can connect with you?
Those are the best ways. I think, you know, if people did want to inquire about the business, they can send a note through to inquiries@helios.co.nz. And whilst we don't directly have any investment opportunities in Helios now, and I should state that at this point in time, but I think if people are interested in the industry, they want to find out a little bit more, we can endeavour to...
Is there something though that might happen in the future, more investment opportunities directly with Helios?
It may do. We certainly never say never. I mean, we're fully funded as it stands, but as the business develops, anything's possible.
Going public one day?
Anything's possible.
Cool. All right.
Yeah.
Well, thanks very much. Really appreciate your time, Paul. Thank you, Pumpkin. Really appreciate
pleasure,
your time.
Pleasure once again.
Yeah.
Your time is expensive and important to us. So thank you. And until then, thanks for listening. Well, there we go. That was probably one of the most interesting shows that we've had on NZ Everyday Investor. You wouldn't think that talking about cannabis is an investment topic, but it totally is. Would you agree, Pumpkin?
Definitely. I would never have thought of it as being an industry that just everyday people would invest in. I've always thought of it as being something that the gangs do.
Something that the gangs
do. Yeah. Mm. But it's just... business people, really.
Mm.
Business people starting up new ventures. And it was interesting to talk about how he does that in an environment where it's actually illegal to sell his product and how he went about doing it.
And there's a massive opportunity, like from an investment opportunity. Currently, it's a $1.3 billion a year industry. That's phenomenal. And that's where it's at right now. this is still just starting. So what does it look like when this industry matures? Obviously, there are opportunities that exist currently as an investor to partake in this. And you need to be careful because it's so new. It's still a Wild West. You need to know where that money is going. Who's responsible for it? What are their values? What's their long-term vision? When are you going to be able to get your money out, et cetera? But I think any everyday investor listening need not panic about, you know, need not hold any of that FOMO, fear of missing out. There's going to be opportunities to enter this space in time. The risk will go down in time as well. Obviously, number one, when it becomes legal, but number two, when the markets mature and there's more options out there, it will become a little bit easier to see. But also just that whole kind of ESG bit, you know, environmental, social, good governance thing. Mm. When you're investing with where your values are already aligned to, there's less conflict, right?
True.
It comes down to that whole congruency thing that we've talked about previously on the show.
Mm, and I think people commit to it more when their values align with it.
Yeah. And it's just this theme that we've been touching on in a couple of shows where it's not just about trying to get a return anymore. It's almost an expression of what you believe in. Mm. Like if you believe that you want to invest in third world countries and in their water infrastructure, you can actually do that. You can invest in, and when you're doing that, you're making the funding for those projects cheaper because more money gets attracted to that industry. And at the same time, if you don't believe in weapons manufacturing companies, don't invest in them.
Mm.
And you're making the funding for those companies a little bit more expensive. So aligning your social beliefs to where your dollars are aligned to is more of an expression of who we are as people, I think, compared to what it used to be, which was just investing.
Mm.
And that's kind of exciting because when you think about it, it's making this whole investing thing more accessible because not everybody is turned on by a profit, but a lot of people are turned on by doing good.
Mm.
Can we bring those two things together?
That's the way of the future, Darcy.
It is the way of the future. Well, there you go. I hope you really enjoyed that. And if you want to find out a little bit more, just visit the NZ Everyday Investor Facebook page or go to www.nzeverydayinvestor.com. And we've got a whole bunch of other stuff that you can get into and read and a whole bunch of other shows that you have maybe never even considered listening to. Get out there. Get edumacated. It's a good thing. Let's get some of that knowledge in there. Get it down your throat. Get in your brain. It's good to be educated about money. It's good to do good stuff with money, too. So, Pumpkin, is there any last parting words of wisdom on this topic that we've been covering over the last 2 weeks?
I think prior to investigating this topic, I had a bit of a closed mind in this area. And I'm still in the process of opening my mind.
I can see your mind slowly, like, trying to open up that mind a little bit.
It's made me say it's not such a scandalous thing after all. It's not something just some dirty old bad guy in the corner is using. It's something that people can benefit from. I'm sure everyone's got someone in their life who could do with some medicinal cannabis who the current health system has not worked for. And I think it relates to a lot of people in just an everyday slice of life.
And next week, we're talking about whether you should vaccinate your children or not.
No, we're not.
That's
too controversial, Darcy.
That's next level. That is something that you will not hear on the show. But hopefully we've maintained our Switzerland approach throughout. But yeah, and we do hope that, you know, the veil might be lifted a little bit more, not just in this topic, but in a lot of other topics where there's social good happening and there's an opportunity. So hope you've enjoyed. Until then.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the NZ Everyday Investor, brought to you by podcasts.nz in conjunction with Ungaro & Co. Financial Services. I've been your host, Darcy Ungaro. Please remember to subscribe to the show, and if you'd like to learn more about what we've covered today or any of our guests, please visit us on Facebook. The NZ Everyday Investor contains information and content designed to get you to think about your investment decisions, but none of this is financial advice. Thanks for listening in, and we'll catch you next time around.